17 miles above Boulder is Barker Dam, which is a big dam. It's a hydro dam. And she wanted to know what's going to happen. You know, will I die? What data do you have? And so what I managed to do that night was get her the emergency action plan for her area, which she did not have. And we learned enough to know that probably the Barker Dam wasn't going to fail right away and totally wash away Boulder, Colorado, where all the U.S. climate research is being done. Not all of it, but... So dam data is important to the people who may be in danger of catastrophic and fatal flooding. And the dangers to those people are not terrorists. The dangers to those people are bad engineering, poor maintenance, policy neglect, underfunding of dam safety, and political manipulation by public officials. And most of these, some of the dams are way too hard for a terrorist to blow up anyway, but not too hard for Mother Nature to turn into a disaster. Just to put a little more perspective on this. Oh, Chris, do you two know each other? You do? Okay, well, you should get to know each other more. That's all. Never mind that. Okay, so point of perspective. How many people were killed in 9/11? I don't know the exact number. It was upward of 3,000. And it was a terrible thing. But you should also know how many people were killed in the Johnstown flood, which was a dam failure disaster back in the 1907 or whatever it was. I don't know. But it was right about 3,000 people. And those lives are just as important and just as valuable as the lives of the people who died in 9/11. But the Johnstown flood was caused by a dam upstream of a populated area, and the dam wasn't well engineered, and the people were in harm's way, and there was a big rainstorm, and it flooded, and the dam failed, and a wall of water washed the town away and killed a lot of people. This happens all the time. Far more often than it should, not all the time. And so, okay, I think we've done with the introductory loop here. So the bottom line here is that stories about dams are a really important environmental story. And the corollary is that restricting information about dams because of a foolish, misguided, and uninformed notion of homeland security is only endangering the public more, okay? That's the commercial. Now we can get down to being geeks. So the biggest and best database about dams and impoundments is the National Inventory of Dams. It's got 84,000 dams in it. And that is not all of the dams in the United States. The National Academy of Sciences has estimated the total number of all dams as high as 1.5 million. That's probably a high estimate. So there are big dams and little dams. There's Hoover Dam, and then there's little old mill ponds back in the woods that nobody's taking responsibility for anymore. So what I've done is collected a whole bunch of data tools for anyone who wants to work on this general subject. And these are just tools. So the real important thing for you to understand is it's a really important story, and there are lots of different stories, and there's a local story in your area if you want to do a local story, and there are a bunch of national stories, too, and state and regional, and It's not just about dam safety, although I may rant about that a bit. It's really about a lot of other things. There was a session here earlier just about dam removal. And, you know, dams are important in a lot of ways. They do good things as well as bad things, although you might not hear it so much at an SEJ meeting. You know, some dams are really helpful for irrigation and for hydropower and for flood control. And in this area, the TVA, you know, they lifted a whole region out of poverty. So let's not forget that, but let's also not forget that we, sitting here in Chattanooga, where the historical flood could be 80 feet above our heads, are sitting downstream of a number of dams that have really big bodies of water behind them. And you might ask, how good are those dams being? What kind of shape are they in? And what would happen if they fail? I'm sure the answers are fine, but you might want to ask. So dams are really just a special case of water control structures. Levees are another, and New Orleans discovered what happened when levees were neglected and politically dysfunctional after Hurricane Katrina. That's actually not, I don't think that's New Orleans, but that's a levee failure going on. Okay, so headlines. So you can move to the next session if you want to. The National Inventory of Dams was once, 15 years ago, all online with lots of good data. And then even before 9/11, they started taking it down. Then 9/11 happened. They took it down. Then they put it back up. And then they took it down again. Then they put it halfway up in a what they call speed bumps. So it's online, but it's not as useful as it could be. You can only see so many dams at a time. You can query it, but you can't download it. And some of the most important fields are blacked out. And for my money, the most important field is the dam hazard ranking. And that's missing from the National Inventory of Dams. Let me take a minute to talk about what the hazard ranking or rating of a dam means. Essentially, there's three of them: high hazard, significant hazard, and low hazard. And to simplify it greatly, there are technical standards for these things. To simplify it greatly, it's a high hazard dam if its failure would produce a loss of life. It's not a judgment about the likelihood of that failure or the condition of the dam, only about what would happen if the dam failed. So, you know, if these dams upstream of Chattanooga failed, then we would all die, you know, or some of us. But fortunately, they're not going to fail today. Significant hazard usually means loss of property when the dam fails, and there are lots of those. And low hazard means probably neither one of those things are going to happen as far as we know. So the government kind of thought that that stuff might be of use to terrorists, which is why they won't let you know it. But fortunately, they were letting you know it 15 years ago when they were publishing it. And the hazard ratings of these dams don't change very much because, in fact, they just get worse. Because over 15 years, more population builds more houses downstream, and over 15 years, a bunch of other things happen that actually make the risks higher. Okay, so anybody who comes to this session can go to I'm going to go to this page so you see it, and we'll go through the process. We're going to get there in just a minute. Okay. So this is this nice short URL that's kind of your gateway to the system. And it's just two links to two further important things. But this is the kind of the headline for day. I'm here to tell you we have liberated the National Inventory of Dams. The SEJ's Watchdog Project, working with the National Institute of Computer Assisted Reporting, NICAR, has scraped the core database, and we've taken all the data that's public out of it, and we've collected it and assembled it into a usable and downloadable database, which we are going to publish. And furthermore, we have acquired the hazard rating fields, the data about these dams, and we've added that back to the database. And so that's all of it. There's actually more information we need that we haven't got yet, and that's an ongoing project. So just because you came to this session, God bless you, if you click on this link, you will go to a Google Docs place. And in order to get here, you need to have a Google login. So if you come to me and tell me it doesn't work, I will tell you, are you logged into Google? You can all have free Google logins. It's not a problem. Probably most of you do. So I'm logged into Google, and I've gone to the Google Docs page that you will get if you click on that link. Huh?
Which link?
The one back here. This is on the web SEJ website. This is SEJ.org/dams, okay? Which is so easy to remember, you don't even have to write it down. So the good news is you can get this, especially if you take it now or in the next 3 days or so. After Monday, Tuesday, it's going into the NICAR database library, and it will cost you like $50 to get it. But I'm going to justify that since I saw the look of dismay on Robert's face. NICAR did a huge amount of really important, valuable work on this project, and they helped out when we got to the point where I needed database skills that they had more of than I did. Let me just kind of a recon question. How many of you have ever used any database software? Okay, good. So you're in the right place. And probably most of you, most of the time, may have been using Microsoft Access. That's currently the native form that this is in, and it's a form that can be translated to other forms. So there it is. We're not going to spend too much time with the big one in Access today. But I'm going to take you to... Yeah, go. That's the whole thing. That's 84,000 dams. Yeah. Wait. Okay, one at a time. Who's...
I just tried to go and it said that I, even though I signed in to Google, I need permission.
Okay. You can all get permission. I think I have to do something. Okay, so go and request access. When the session is over, I will do whatever I have to do to make the access universal. I tested it by trying to get into it, and of course I got in.
So what happens after Monday? If you go back to that link, would you still be able to get an
Maybe Monday, maybe not Tuesday. So grab it while you can. Isn't that what Janis Joplin said? Yeah. Well, we like to think of it as public domain. I like to think that we have liberated this data. If you go to NICAR and say, I'm a poor freelancer and I only make $10,000 a year, please won't you give it to me? And, you know, or you might have a friend who will give it to you. Once it's out of their hands, then you can have it. If you have a friend with a big, big thumb drive, or not so big, you can get this, all right? And there's a... NICAR deserves to exist as an organization. NICAR is doing the public and the profession a service by putting all this online. Just to tell you how cool NICAR is, I'm going to go to their site. And we'll look at their database library, which they have a whole lot of stuff that's good for all kinds of other reporting. But they have a database library. And, I mean, look at all this stuff that they have. And some of it's like EPA data, but they make it easier to use. They curry comb it. They have the federal national inventory of bridges, so you can find out what bridges are going to collapse, and boat registrations, and DOE campus crime. Look at all this stuff. This is a gold mine for data reporters, and they have a very low fee schedule. So, like, if your paper is small, you pay them hardly anything, and if your paper is huge, yes, Chris. Oh, yeah. Well, it was already liberated. So I will give you that answer. So there is another cool thing called the National Performance of Dams Project. Here we go. Program. And they have a cool site. This is a bunch of civil engineers at Stanford, and they're mostly interested in keeping dams from failing. And so they've collected a bunch of interesting stuff, but since they're civil engineers, we know they're not terrorists, so they got the data and they put it up. Because their job is to protect the public, unlike the U.S. government. And so... in their data dams directory, they included the hazard rankings. Now, the question, which I cannot immediately answer, is how good and how recent are those hazard rankings? And I am still working to get a good answer to that. But in the product that we did and that you can have today, that we included both the current hazard ratings from the NPDP and the 11-year-old ratings from the 2002 National Inventory of Dams, because the government published them back then. And I just wish to note for the record that this was post 9/11. So think about the implications of that for just a minute, and then think about the strength of the justification for keeping them offline. While we're here at the NPDP, you can see they have a bunch of other stuff that's really good. Dam incidents, which is all the, you know, dam. It's not just dam failures, but it's a bunch of other things that matter about dam safety and performance. Penstock incidents for hydro plants, earthquakes, which is another important angle you should think about, dam modifications, dam removals, consequences of these are historic failures, and that's all good stuff worth knowing about. So that's where it came from. And we are going on the theory that this data is more current, which it probably is. So just to step back, I'm going to leave this up. Just to step back a minute, the National Inventory of Dams has a bunch of other information in it that you and I can't see. Since 2009, at least, and probably since well before that, the NID publicly acknowledges that it has been collecting all available information on the condition of high-hazard dams in particular, but it presumably has information about other, like, significant hazard dams. And that's in the database, and you can't see it yet. And if you think about the rationale of this, it's even less. So these are the crumbly dams, the leaky dams, the ones who flunked their last inspection or got a D-. And we want to know about this not because of the terrorists. We want to know about it because these are the dams that will fail first during a flood event. And it's this information is even more important for public safety than the hazard ranking, I will venture to say. Okay. So that's the bad news, is we don't have it. The good news is, in many cases, the states have it. And I didn't have the resources to go and collect it all, but there's talk of trying to do that. The Corps pretty much gets it from the states. Not entirely, but a lot. And so each state has a dam safety program, or doesn't have a very good one. But some states have very good ones, and they inventory their own dams, and they inspect and regulate their own dams, and they do it on a schedule, or they don't do it, and they write reports. And the results of these reports, that's data, and they give the dam a ranking as to how safe it is. And if it's unsafe, they're supposed to make the dam owner fix it and fine them if they don't. So there are a bunch of reporters who have done good stories using state dam databases. And California is one of the good ones, I understand. I've never used it. And it would be nice if we can't liberate the stuff that's in the NID, we can replace it with data that we've gathered ourselves. But it's a lot of work. Okay. But there are a number of people who are talking about collaborating on doing this. All right, so I'm going to go back. Hold on.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. They are the keepers of this information, but in many cases they're getting it from other people. So there are a bunch of other federal agencies that own and operate and even regulate dams. But most of the dams, the number I'm using right now is about 85%, are actually not owned by the feds and regulated by the states. Not lately, but I think I'm going to do it. Yeah, Chris. The FERC does. Yeah. It's true. So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission regulates and permits all non-federal hydropower dams. And that tends to be some of the bigger ones. But the biggest of the hydro dams typically are federal. So, whatever. So, yes, FERC is a great resource. FERC has online database resources. There's a link to them here and in this main article that's on the SEJ page. This is a little blah blah about it, but the important thing is here, this link. FERC publishes online a spreadsheet of all current FERC licensed hydro facilities. Every hydro facility for practical purposes is associated with a dam. And also important is a spreadsheet of exempted hydro facilities. So under various laws that I won't bore you with, the FERC is allowed to exempt from its licensing small hydro dams under a certain size with allegedly limited environmental impacts. Okay. So, and you want to know about those too, and there are almost as many of, there are probably as many of them as there are of the licensed ones. So, that's an important data resource for anyone who's looking into this stuff. they're not so much interested in safety as they are in things like, environmental impact, because typically the opposition to those licenses is environmental in nature. But you talk to me, you get the idea that safety is the only issue, but it's only the issue, well, it is, it's a really important issue, but it's also only the issue because that's what they use to keep public access to this data down. FERC is currently a pretty good actor, but I will tell you the first issue of the SEJ Watchdog had a big article about a dam in near Missoula, Montana, now gone, called the Milltown Dam. And it was very old and very leaky and crumbly and moderately dangerous. But it wasn't, you probably wouldn't call it a high hazard dam. I don't know. It had the world's biggest Superfund site behind it. And if it failed, you know, probably the worst catastrophe would be the movement of a huge bunch of toxic sediments. So it was already an EPA Superfund site, and the state was working on the removal plan. And FERC, back then, in the days of craziness, announced that all the information about the condition of that dam was a Homeland Security secret, and that not even the county commissioners would be allowed to know about the fact that it was leaking, which was published in the Missoula newspaper. So, FERC is not always the answer to the question, but this is a good source of data. I'm going to try to run through some of this. So FERC is good. Then there's a thing called the National Levee Database, which fortunately comes up right after Mark walks in the room. And it's limited in its scope. There are tens and tens and tens of thousands of levees in this country, some of them quite dangerous. Did I get something wrong, Mark? No, you just can't see the screen. Let me see if I can blow this up. Okay. So this database right now only contains the levees that are in, there's a core, the core has a levee safety program, which Mark could tell you about, and I probably couldn't, but I have a link to something that tells you about it. So that's, go ahead, Mark. He's going to fix it. Come up here and talk. I think that's a live mic.
Okay, so post-Katrina, Congress ordered the Corps of Engineers to do a five-year study of every federal levy in the United States and also to look at non-federal levies. And so it started creating this levy database and started studying all these levies. And they had to meet basically what they were doing was trying to figure out whether or not they meet the new standards that are now in effect, because the Corps of Engineers also had to change all of its engineering design standards for building levees in the aftermath of Katrina, because the majority of flooding in New Orleans was caused by failures of levees that were improperly designed. The major result of that is that the Corps now is going through the United States and telling local agencies and local sponsors of federal levies that your levy meets our new standards or it doesn't. And when it doesn't, then those communities have a year to agree to improve the levies to the new standards, which usually takes millions and billions of dollars to do, which, of course, is causing all sorts of minor little problems. So that would be a reason why that database might be useful to you. And you can also basically short-circuit the database at times by going directly to your local Corps of Engineers office, PR people, and say, I want this. And when they say no, then say, here's my Freedom of Information Act request for the document showing your inspections of these levies and what you've told the local agency that they need to do.
Good.
Shall we look up a levy or two just for the hell of it?
Sure.
Do you have a zip code or a one that you know is egregious?
I do not, and okay. I apologize. Unfortunately, I've been sort of in BP hell for the last 2 years, so I haven't been looking at the levy database at all in that time.
Well, anyone want to ask for a request on this, or I'll just put in something?
4357.
What is it? Oh, four. I put in two, huh? 4357. Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's messing up. It might work. So I don't know what we'll get on this query, but one good thing about this database is that it's better with mapping than a lot of the other ones. Minimally acceptable. Is that good enough for you? And now I don't know how to show this to you.
Okay, delete it.
I'm going to see if I get it. No, nothing. So this system produces pretty good maps showing the areas that would be flooded if the levee failed. And they're superimposed as layers on top of, you know, your recognizable geographic features. So you can look at them. I, however, am just going to look awkward if I try to make that happen here. But
why don't you do 20036?
Okay.
You know what that zip code is?
No, it's probably where the ground zero was, right?
It's Washington, D.C.
Okay. Oh, yes, I should know that. Well, you know, actually, Washington, D.C.
No, not 00 said, 20036. That is ground zero. It's the White House.
Yeah. But. Okay. Oh, that's Brentwood. Oh, this is everything within 10 miles of it. See, I restrict it.
How many people knew that there were that many levees within 10 miles of the White House? And the look at the one that's unacceptable.
Anacostia, that's pretty much across the river from the White House, Department of the Navy. That's the Navy Yard. Which is right on the river. So if there's a flood, that levee is protecting the Navy Yard. So these are important. There's a lot of stories here. Amy is a California reporter who might have to worry sometime about some of those California levees failing. I don't know if they're in this system or not. And I don't know if the state has a program or not. They do. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's just what I don't know right away. I where's that?
Right in the center.
That's what we want? Dang. Okay, let's look at the Navy Yard.
Go to the one next to the bottom. Region 3. Do that.
Yeah, I just couldn't see it because my eyes are bad. This is exactly it. Oh, look, this is very helpful. Let's point out that, get on your tour bus and we'll go around and do all the national tourist landmarks.
That money cuts across the mall and it's unacceptable.
Yeah. There's Constitution Avenue. And it does flood. We've had those floods. I've seen them. These are typically, you know, river floods from the Potomac. And the Potomac is really a flashy river. Its levels go up on a geometric scale. And this all used to be a swamp. And they built Washington, D.C. there now. And like that. Yeah. So, boy, what a great example. Thank you. But isn't that a useful thing to see the levied area, the area that is protected by the so-called alleged rarely inspected levee that's minimally acceptable? That's it. Okay, so there's one like that in your area. What? So the stories that come from this are many and important and underreported. And there's many reasons for that, including all the troubles of our industry and the formerly the difficulty of doing a lot of these stories. But the National Levee Database didn't exist for all purposes 5 years ago. I may be off by a year, and they've spent most of that time just loading data into it. And now they've got most of the core covered levees into it, or maybe even nearly all. And so now the question is, what next? And that's an important question, and it might take a long time to answer it. But in the meantime, people can do stories. I want to try to, I keep losing my place up here. Trying to get back to where I was. Here we go. I'd like to show you a couple of these other things that are in this page. So there are a bunch of other databases related to these things that are important for reporting. One is the Coal Impoundment Location and Information System, the Coal LIS. So there's a subcategory of dams that contain coal slurry, which is the semi-liquid, semi-solid waste product that is, it's a slurry of water and dust that's produced when mined coal is cleaned at the site. And it produces vast amounts of dusty, rocky mineral waste that's pretty ugly on a lot of levels of toxicity. But more importantly, there's safety issues. And there have been major... So they build a dam. The dam is typically built out of earth and sometimes coal dust, which isn't the best material for making dams out of. And then they start pouring liquid coal slurry into the impoundment created behind that dam. And the coal dust settles, and they pump the water out and reuse it for coal cleaning. And this can be what you get here. This picture, here's the coal slurry dam up here in a natural ravine, and down here is an elementary school. So, and this is an egregious and famous case, but the point is these things have failed, and they have failed in the recent past, and because of those failures, the Buffalo Creek flood killed, I'm thinking, maybe 70 to 100 people. There's a link here. I'm not going to go there because I'm trying to stay on track. What? 172. Well, I put those two numbers together and you get the right one. So they created this database presumably to warn the public about this hazard. But in fact, depending on the state you're in, many of the states have not yet completely or adequately regulated these structures. And not all of them, I do believe, are in the National Inventory of Dams for any number of reasons. And so this is an important database, especially if you live in the Appalachian region, although it's not limited to that. And it's got 312 impoundments in it. Each of them is probably a news story waiting to be written. And collectively, they're another news story waiting to be written. And I don't think anybody but Ken Ward has written that story in the recent past. Maybe one or two. But it isn't being written enough, and it's dangerous. Okay? So that's another data resource that you can put together with these others. Now, I was fortunate to go on the tour to the Kingston Fossil Plant, 2 miles up the Tennessee River system, which I still don't understand, where in 2008 there was a catastrophic spill of coal ash slurry from a huge impoundment, so big none of us can imagine it. Really. And the immediate fuss was over, well, what other coal ash impoundments could fail? Most of these are kept in by earthen dikes, and these are not highly engineered, most of them. And one of these failed in the case of Kingston. Fortunately, nobody was killed, but an entire settlement of houses was pretty much wiped out. And the ash is very toxic, and a lot of damage was done to the river. And the company spending $1.2 billion cleaning it up, which is a lot of money, even for an electric utility. And there's more like it. And they're not all being regulated, and they're not all being handled. But right after this, Lisa Jackson came storming into EPA, said, "We're going to fix this, by gosh." And within a year, she had proposed some regulations on regulating coal ash impoundments. And within a year, within another year after that, the industry had sandbagged her and nothing's happened since. But one of the important things is that EPA quickly did a survey to find out where were the most dangerous coal ash impoundments. And they got a list. There were 47 on the first list or thereabout. And immediately the Corps of Engineers and the Department of Homeland Security said to EPA, you can't publicize this. You can't disclose this. And EPA told Congress about it, and Barbara Boxer at the Senate Environment Committee made this big deal about it, saying, well, we know about these hazards, but we can't disclose them. And of course, there was a hearing about that. And within a month or two, the Corps was so embarrassed and whatnot that they actually, EPA eventually, God bless it. See, EPA is not all bad. EPA ended up disclosing all this information. And it did it by the political ploy of publicly embarrassing the Corps and the Homeland Security for trying to hide this stuff, okay? Just saying. And so EPA's got a lot more information about a lot more coal impoundments, and it's here. Okay. Click. It's in spreadsheet form. And you can get the whole spreadsheet here, but there's a lot more information about it. Couple main points. Safety isn't the only issue. Pollution is really the bigger issue. It's pollution of groundwater in many cases and pollution of surface water in other cases. Most of these storage facilities for coal ash, many of them are near, because the coal plants are built near water bodies for cooling purposes, the ash pits and ponds and lagoons are right there near the river too, and they're vulnerable to disruption by flooding. And when the ash gets in the river, it's really ugly, but it also gets in the groundwater, and in case you don't know, it's full of various toxic metals, arsenic, lead, selenium, and others. And so that's probably the bigger threat. So the number of, I can't remember the number that's in this spreadsheet, and I'll be taking my life in my hands if I click on this, but let's go ahead. But it's on the order of more than 1,000, I think, or thereabouts. This may not work. Forgive me if it doesn't. Okay, hold on. Didn't work. Okay. Heck, there's another way to do it, but I'm not going to take the time. So these things aren't in the National Inventory of Dams either, a lot of them. But many of them, some of them are, many of them have hazard ratings. Of course, we worry most about the significant hazard ones, but we also worry about the volume and the effects on groundwater. And Lisa Evans from Earth Justice was here somewhere at the conference, and she knows all about this stuff. And if you look at the list of experts from the Kingston Fossil Plant Tour, you will get a good list of people to talk to about this. So that's one more. I'm going to try to turn this over to you guys in a minute. But this little picture supports my point that the coal ash impoundments are often near flowing rivers that can flood and damage the berms that hold the coal ash in. There's a lot more information on this, including aerials from SourceWatch. This is one that's popped up recently and is relevant here since the Sequoia nuclear plant is right upstream of us here within eyeshot practically, but it recently came to light that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had done a survey of nuclear plants and what risks were presented to those nuclear plants by flooding. sometimes catastrophic flooding from dam failure, but sometimes just flooding from the rivers that they sat on. And the point is, again, this is a freedom of information issue. The NRC wouldn't make that public until some enterprising gumshoe liberated the data, and now it's public. It was really Greenpeace, I think, that got it, but it was then picked up by the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, and they published the reports, and they're in court right now trying to get more information about it. But this is a pointer to a whole other family of stories that there might be near you or in your region. And that's, again, a data story of sorts, although the number of instances here is of importance is probably less than 35 plants. Okay. So there was another session at this conference about dam removal. More than 1,000 dams have been removed in this country over the last decade or two. It's a growing movement, and the environmentalists are getting good at making it happen, and often there are good economic reasons for making it happen. And the group American Rivers has a database of over 1,000 removed dams that no longer exist. And they may eventually give me that data without the permission to publish it. But they fortunately have published a lot of it in non-database form. So they do these annual reports, and then they list each dam that got removed that year and take credit for it, which often is the right thing. See how many there are. And this is just one year, and then you get to the bottom of that year, and there's more years. Okay? So if you're inclined, you can take your database. Here's the next year, see? You can go and get your database software and type all this data in, and then you'll have a database. But I didn't do that. And they may eventually be persuaded to publish their database, but it's always being updated, and, you know. So, but that's another resource. Okay. So, and then I'm going to shut up in just a minute. The real untapped source for many of the stories that you might want to do are the state agencies, because those are in every state there's an agency that regulates dam safety and dam permitting or licensing, and they inspect the dams, and you can FOIA their reports, and you might even get them, and they might even give them to you without FOIA, and that's where a lot of the stories are. Okay, and some people have used those to do good stories. I'm going to zip down to the bottom and show you this. Here's some more sources. And then, let's see if this link actually works. Yeah. So here's some more. Heather Duncan, God bless her, did this recent feature package on dams just in, like, northern Alabama, and she found all sorts of cool things. And if you want an example of what you could do with a dam story in whatever size region you're interested in, this would be it. It's undercovered. There's a lot more examples of good coverage, but there's not enough. Okay. Let's open it up to questions. What? Okay, so if, yeah. So the main, this is all going to be on the SEJ website. This, or there. Okay. And there's even a list of 10 kind of generic story ideas if you're lacking them. At the very bottom of that page, there's a thing that says supplemental links for this page. That's just because this is kind of quick and dirty and I threw it up there. So you can link to Heather Duncan from there. And there's another one. I started to, During the flood in Colorado, like 12 dams failed right then and there. Maybe they were small, but only the Denver Post and the Boulder Daily Camera and a few papers like that actually covered that. So what? I don't know if any of you have any questions or interests or things that you want to know more about, or but this would be the time. I'm tired of talking. Yeah. They do, and they publish it. Their NID system publishes it as string data, and I'm not a mathematician, but I know that the mathematics of latitude and longitude require certain kinds of arithmetic. So somebody needs to be able to do that translation, but it's there, and I'm pretty sure there are functions that you can use to quickly translate it into a GIS mapping system. And in fact, they do that because the NID does mapping. So mapping that stuff is good. And there are some maps available, and you could do better ones probably. Yeah. Yeah. It takes work and expertise, and I'm not real good at it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, very often the issues there are ecological, environmental. Quite frequently, it may involve opening that river up to migrating fish or migrating kayakers or something. True, they're often less dangerous because they're smaller and silted up. And there are state or regional or local environmental campaigns to remove some of those dams. American Rivers has chapters and branches in the various regions, and I know there have been a bunch of important dam removals in New England. I think asking those an ecological questions is important. Finding those dams is important. Finding the dam owners is important. The NID can help with that because it names dam owners. It tells you the year they were constructed, which is pretty useful information. It tells you the height of the dam, which is pretty useful information. But the one other thing I want you to know is that actually not all of those, especially those old small mill dams, are in the system. And they may be included in the 1.5 million that aren't in the system.
One thing I can add to that, in New Hampshire they have a lot of these run-of-the-mill dams, and they actually led to flooding in Connecticut and Maine.
Yeah.
And after that,
and ownership may in some cases be legally fuzzy, or not in some others. So I just made a little note in my page to say that, well, yeah, this is an issue, but you really have to go after that at a state level. Washington in 2008 started to go after trying to discover and document all those dams that weren't in the system. And other states have done this as well. So that's a story too. And there are human stories behind those old mill dams and what role they have or haven't played in the local ecosystem. But in other cases, You know, I thought there were, oh, they're not building dams anymore. But actually, one class of dam builders today are the real estate developers who will build what they hope is a kind of recreational lake and then sell cottages all the way around it. And they are just experts at getting in under the regulatory thresholds. So if the state says we're going to regulate all new lakes over 75 acres, they'll build a 74-acre lake. Heather wrote about that. Anyway, here's just one example, which is the only one I had time to find and talk about, but you might be able to find some in your state. And you know, Massachusetts has a pretty low number of dams in the NID compared to a lot of other states. Maybe it's just small. Maybe they're old. Other questions? Yeah, that was Washington State. So, yeah, there's a couple of stories there. Washington has a pretty good program, and I think they're pretty open with... Huh? Because they're doing well, huh? Yeah. They're pretty open with their data, I think. So, data-wise, there are a number of databases that help with other dam stories. Like, for a lot of dams, there's actually an associated water quality issue. And that's real complicated, and I can't explain it adequately here today. But what I'm telling you is, I lost my place. That there are water quality databases that you might not know about that you could work in relation to the NID or some other dam database that you've got. Even Wikipedia. Another major category of the dams that aren't in the NID is the little farm ponds. And you may not think those are that important, but in many cases, federal money has been spent on building those or helping build those. And although I don't have it in my hands yet, there's actually a Natural Resources Conservation Service database of all the dams that they helped build. And if you're interested in that story, well, then you can get that data. Okay, but it's not online. You have to go call the guy up and get a disk of it. Another, in a newsier vein, you know, you may be doing a flood story in real time, like the one in Boulder, Colorado. And if that's the case, and if the government is not shut down at the moment, you might be able to get... The real-time USGS stream flow data, which will help you find out, you know, what is the flood stage on that stretch of river where your crumbly dam resides. So I've listed a bunch of these others. The USGS even has a smartphone app now, so you can be out in the field and you can get the local water gauges if you want it. In some regions, the ecological impact of dams is goes to wetlands, and so the National Wetlands Inventory is another database that might be helpful. I haven't even touched on the whole issue of federal dams. Okay, so. That's another story or set of stories. But the Bureau of Reclamation is a major dam building and dam operating entity in the West. They do have their own database of their own facilities. If you want to look systematically at the Bureau of Reclamation, that database would help. These are all live links in our page. And there are other federal dams that really aren't in here quite at this moment, but there are federally built dams under like the BPA, the Bonneville Power Authority system, or in fact our very own Tennessee Valley Authority here, which is a great subject to talk about. They have a list of dams. You can get it. It's a kind of a specialized story. It's an incredible story. It's quite likely that most of their dams are in pretty good shape, but one or two of them are not. Okay, we're about out of time, so just to tantalize you a little more, I will tell you that the Corps of Engineers has a secret list of the 100 most dangerous dams in the United States, the ones that they are personally worried about, and you are not allowed to know about it. One of them is the Wolf Creek Dam, which holds back the Cumberland Lake Reservoir, I believe is. Okay. And Jim Bruggers, who's not here, wrote about this some 5 years ago. But even on the TVA, that's a hydro dam and a recreation dam, but even on the TVA, there are dams that are shaky. So the next thing we will liberate is that list. Well, it's because the Corps keeps it secret and because nobody knows about it and nobody's willing to go to court and be called a terrorist for trying to find out about it. And many of these dams are actually known, okay? So, like, if the Oconee Dam failed, it would inundate... Oh, wait. That's the name. There's an Oconee power plant, a nuclear power plant, somewhere in this region,
South Carolina,
and thank you. There's a dam just a few miles upstream of that, which is involved in impounding water, some of which is used for cooling the Oconee plant. But the point is, it's like we learned from the Fukushima disaster in Japan, the meltdown. If that dam failed, it would swamp that nuclear plant in such a catastrophic way that it could stop cooling and create a meltdown. And that would be bad. But we haven't been allowed to know about it until recently. And I'd venture to say that keeping the public unaware of that is more dangerous than helping the public be aware of that. Yeah, Mark.
One of the other things to think about when you're doing these stories, and most of these stories have to do with the Corps of Engineers, is two things. Number one, the Corps now has a design memo piece that has a specific memorandum dealing with how they handle sea level rise issues involving climate change.
Yes.
They're required to take it into account. They originally had in that memo discussed the three alternative scenarios in the 2000 IPCC report and said, well, we'll look at the bottom two of those three scenarios. They updated it 2009, I think. We're now required to look at all three of those scenarios, and they really are somewhere between two and three in what they're looking at, depending on where they're doing it. But that's something to think about in terms of your study, your stories. The other thing is that a lot of levees are designed to 100-year standards because that's what the flood insurance is about. Okay? That's what the rules are for flood insurance. It's not 100 years to begin with. It's 1% chance of occurring in any year. And there's a 35% chance of that happening within the life of a 30-year mortgage. Okay? So that's a bit of a better way of looking at what the real risk is. And the other problem is, of course, that in many instances along the coastlines, that risk may be wildly out of date based on new modeling of the potential effects of hurricane storm surge. Sandy is a good example of that. Katrina was an excellent example of that. The Corps updated its levee requirements in the aftermath of Katrina for New Orleans, and levees that were required to be 17.5 feet high now are required to be 32 feet high. So you can see what a significant jump that can be. The problem comes for the communities that have to pay 35% of the cost of any improvements. They will not be as lucky as New Orleans, which had to pay 0% of the cost.
And that applies to levees, but also dams or not?
Dams are different, and they have different standards. Mm-hmm. So the dams are somewhere 750 to 1,000-year recurrence kind of things. And that will change as well because of other effects of climate change that don't have to do with sea level rise, and so they're not necessarily completely in that design memo that the Corps of Engineers has. There are going to be changes in water rates, mm-hmm. rainfall rates, that we don't know what it's going to be. Is it going to be lower or higher in many areas of the country as a result of climate change? So those are questions that should be asked as well.
Yeah, anyone else? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are you writing about that stuff?
I did.
Good.
Well, it's interesting because the Corps looks at when the Corps looks at water levels in the Great Lakes, they're not. I interviewed somebody in the Corps office in Detroit, and they said they haven't been taking into effect that climate change there. And I said, well, don't you think you should? He said, yeah, we're not instructed to do it. So.
That's the usual core mantra: is we're not authorized to do it. It's not in the authorization legislation.
First, won't include climate change in its consideration of the license.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about for flood dams?
No.
Well, another thing I didn't mention, but FEMA and FEMA flood maps are. Another resource in this area, and map resources are good, as we saw with those inundation areas. There's a whole category of things called Corps of Engineers inundation maps, which is what would happen if the dam failed. It shows where the floods would be. And those are not publicly disclosed at this point either, without a great deal of fussing and political pressure. So there's lots of data to access that needs to be accessed. It's past 12. I think we're supposed to stop. So let's end our formal session. And if you want to move on to the next thing, that's fine. I'll be here for a little while. And, thank you. And this is all online, so it'll be better pointed to in the near future.